where do you start with somebody? You're gonna coach or consult with a prime executive in one of the large corporate entities in the world. Where do you begin with those guys? Because frankly, most of them think they know everything, and most of them do know a hell of a lot.
Well, that's what I always like that quote by. It's attributed to John Wooden, but I think it was actually Harry Truman who said it first. It said, it's the things you learn after you know it all that matter the most in life. And I couldn't agree more. The older I get, the less I realize I know.
Hi, my name is Morris Sims, and I'm the host of the Business of Sales podcast, powered by Allego. Now, Allego is a sales enablement system that can help you streamline your tech from 7 systems all the way down to 1 and save you well over 30% while you do it. So go to Allego.com and set up a demo. What have you got to lose except, well, maybe a whole bunch of stress? Give it a shot. Let me know what you think. The purpose of the Business of Sales podcast is to provide you with information, principles, and concepts so that you can run your business more efficiently and effectively and profitably. That's it. It's just that simple. After working with and training business owners and sales professionals for over 4 decades, God, that sounds like a long time, I've come to a conclusion. Most of us need bites of information and ideas that we probably didn't know existed until we heard them. We don't need big 90-minute or 2-hour discussions about how to sell or how to run our business. Most of us really and truly can't donate that much of our time to the cause of self-development each and every week. So I want you to hear from other people who run their businesses and people that can give you help in some way that's going to make it interesting and useful for you. Useful. Practical. That's my word. I love it. Let's get practical and give you something that you can use. Well, that being said, let's do it. Here we go. One of the things that I love to tell folks all the time is that words and language matter, especially on the sales front, on the sales platform, in the sales world out there. What you say and how you say it really does matter. The words you use matter. They paint a picture. They tell people what you're thinking. They give you some direction for the people you're talking with. And one word can make a difference in how somebody perceives what you're trying to share with them and how you're trying to influence them. Today, Danny Purcell is with us, Dr. Danny Purcell. And Danny does some really neat stuff. And I'm just really excited about having you on the show. Danny, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Morris. More importantly, thanks for all that you do. We need to spread a lot more joy in the world, and you're doing that.
Well, thank you. It's heck of a lot more fun that way, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about you. You got your hands in so many different things. It's just incredible. I couldn't begin to do it justice.
Yeah, I think I'm a jack of all trades, master of none, Morris. Basically, my mission is to bring joy back into education and the workplace, and I do that in 4 different ways. First of all, I speak around the world, primarily to schools to get the teachers and principals not to quit. Second of all, I have the world's top reading engagement program online, which in about 2 months, just over 2 months, it shows parents how to get their kids to read more, read better, and love reading, which is ironic because I grew up hating reading as a child. Third, I work with a wonderful company called Cyber Smarties, which is a social media platform for kids ages 5 to 12 that teaches kids positive social media habits. So, for example, if I were to type in a message to you, Morris, I think you're ugly, it won't let me send the message. Instead, it gets a pop-up of alternative ways to talk to a person in a positive way. And it annoys kids so much that it slows them down that within 2 weeks, the kids are all writing positive messages. And basically, the program has been proven to completely eliminate cyberbullying in Ireland. It's now in India, the UAE, Turkey, New Zealand, and I've been asked to try and get it into the United States. And then fourth, this is what I've been really passionate about lately, is I go all around the country or I have Zooms with executives and entrepreneurs, basically showing them how to craft powerful presentations that get their audience to take the next step, whether that's to buy their product or to donate to their cause or even just to consider the ideas that they're pushing. So I have all kind. You're absolutely right. My finger's in a lot of different pies, and one of these days I'll figure out what I want to do when I grow up.
That sounds like a good idea. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, my wife taught elementary school for over 30 years, and we used to have, my background's in engineering, so we used to have this argument. Well, honey, you can teach them all the reading and the grammar and all that kind of stuff, but in reality, we've got to teach them math and science. That's really where it's all about. No, sweetheart, that's not. You've got to teach them how to read first. Yeah, but I mean, they'll get that. They've got to learn the math and the science. I want these third graders to learn calculus. And she's going, no, honey, you can't do that. They've got to learn how to read first. And then she finally looked at me one day, Danny, and she said, how could you solve a word problem if you didn't know how to read? And I went, oh, crap, you win. You win. That's it. Got to teach them to read before we teach them anything else. And so I'm really excited about your reading engagement program, but that's a subject for another time. I'm really mostly interested for our audience to have you share with us some of the things that you do with folks to help them improve their presentation skills in the words and the language that they use in doing that. Where do you start with somebody? You're gonna coach or consult with a prime executive in one of the large corporate entities in the world. Where do you begin with those guys? Because frankly, most of them think they know everything, and most of them do know a hell of a lot.
Well, that's what I always like that quote by. It's attributed to John Wooden, but I think it was actually Harry Truman who said it first. It said, it's the things you learn after you know it all that matter the most in life. And I couldn't agree more. The older I get, the less I realize I know.
More to come right after this. Well, here it is. The Business of Sales is close to 200 episodes old. Yep. 200 episodes. That means 200 weeks in a row, the Business of Sales has been out there doing the best that we can to provide you with some practical ideas, concepts, principles, and guests to help you grow your business. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and I promise you, we're going to work hard to deliver outstanding insights from other business owners and experts that are out there in the field today. We've seen a lot of stuff that people are out there producing and are selling, and ideas that they have to help you, and stuff that they're providing for you, and things that they'd like for you and me both to buy. Yeah, I'm a sucker for buying whatever my guests are selling. But Allego is our sponsor, and I chose them specifically because I know one of the co-founders. I've never had one concern when working with him, and that would be Mr. Mark Magnacca. His company and Mark are built on integrity and professionalism. So go to Allego.com, click around, and schedule a demo. I think you're going to find that I'm right. I trust these people, and I believe that you can take a look for yourself, and you'll be surprised at what all you'll find. Allego.com. Go now.
The starting point for any good presentation are two clarity questions I ask people. And those questions are, who is your audience and what is the problem that you help them solve? And this works whether you're a school teacher trying to teach the kids calculus or an executive trying to get the board to accept your idea, or you're an entrepreneur trying to sell your latest product. Unless you know who your audience is, you're going to have a hard time with whatever you're trying to do. And the most important thing I find with most people is they don't like to be salesy. And I say you have to change your point of view when you're on a stage from a sales-minded point of view to a service-minded point of view. I always hate these speeches on servant leadership. I say, well, that's just redundant because by definition, all leaders are servants. The quickest, you know, the toughest thing for anybody to do when they're making a presentation is to get their audience to trust them. And so here's the first tip I give people. If you really want your audience to trust them, to trust you, serve them. Do something that actually helps them. I'll watch presentations all the time where people, they'll describe a problem for 30 minutes, but they never actually offer a practical solution. I think whether your audience is going to do business with you or not, you have a responsibility to them since they've given you their time, you have a responsibility to give them some kind of concrete solution to their problem. And it could be something basic. There's actually, you know, one of the things I teach people is how to seed their talks with what I call sweet nothings. This is what, when you were courting your wife, Morris, I bet you were kind of always giving these subliminal messages to her. And you can do the same thing when you're giving a presentation, when you're serving your audience. But the best way to actually build the trust of your audience is to actually serve them. And there's lots of research on this. It's kind of interesting. The research shows that you actually don't even have to solve the problem that you're addressing. You just need your audience to consider you helpful. So I'll give you a funny example. A friend of mine, he used to train teachers in reading. And in the middle of his presentation, he said, "Oh, wait a sec, I've got something. This is the greatest thing. This will help all of you. If you ever lock yourself out of your car, as long as you have your cell phone, here's what you do, is you call up your significant other, and you have them take the car keys and put it next to their cell phone, and you put your cell phone next to your car door, and that will actually unlock your car wherever you are in the world. Morris, I've tried it. It works." This is the most amazing thing. This has nothing to do with his talk whatsoever, and yet people 20 years after he's delivered a speech come up to him and say, "Oh my gosh, I remember that. You were so helpful. I locked myself out of my car. I remember what you said," which is fascinating. It has nothing to do with whether he talks, but he was able to build up relationships because he was showing people that he was trustworthy. It doesn't have to be so complicated, Morris. I mean, one of the things I show people is that when used properly, your cell phone can be a great tool. You don't have to spend your time griping on Twitter. What you can do is what I do is I always set up little reminders on my calendar. And so when I'm stuck in a line, I'm like learning things. And so I'm a bad Christian. I'm always trying to learn different scripture. I'm always amazed when people actually know scripture from the Bible. I'm like, I don't remember anything. And so right now I have an update every morning at 4:08 a.m. Philippians 4:8 is, "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things." I've been trying to learn that because I like to start my day in a positive mindset.
Well, you've chosen St. Paul, who did not know what punctuation was and wrote sentences that are probably, you know, 10 times too long. But still, it's darn good stuff, man. I'm impressed, Danny. That's a marvelous thing to do, especially at 4:08 in the morning. Oh, Lord.
Well, you can do all kinds of. So like I have when I read the book Dune, there's a thing called the Litany Against Fear. And so I've been trying to learn that. So every day at 9:11, because it's fearful, I'm trying to remember. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the tiny death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over and through me. And when the fear has passed, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. When the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. I wanted to learn that because I'm like, oh, that's really good. That's good for my mindset. I got married on December 20th. And so every day at 12:20, I have an alert to tell my wife that I love her. You know, I love the St. Crispian's Day speech from Henry V by Shakespeare, which is Act 4, Scene 4. It's 50 lines. So every day at 4:04 in the afternoon, I'm trying to learn, you know, "Well, see that wishes so, my cousin Westmoreland," it's 50 lines. I'm not going to say the whole thing. But basically what I'm trying to teach people is, hey, here's a useful tool so you don't waste your time, which is the most precious thing you have. That's something helpful. I was working with a woman a couple of weeks ago, and she works with traumatized people, and she was trying to figure out something she could do for her audience. And I said, "Well, you know, when you smile, it actually produces endorphins in your brain that make you feel happier, and you don't even have to smile. There's research that shows if you just bite onto a pen, it feigns the motion of a smile, and it tricks your brain into thinking it's smiling, and it will actually produce endorphins." And so she uses that all the time. So there's all kinds of little tricks you can give people. You know, people will bring, they always are asking me for those types of strategies. And really, one of the things that puts me in demand, there's two things really, is first of all, a lot of these people that are training people how to speak, they always start off with sad stories. I was actually judging a speaking competition recently, Morris. There was 1,300 speeches. Not a single one of them was funny. And I mean, here's three things I point out. First of all, everybody's had a lot of bad things happen to them in the world the last couple of years. I think the world needs hope. They don't need to hear your tragic story. I mean, I'm not trying to diminish it, but everybody's had something bad happen to them. I think people need hope.
But that's not it's not where you start.
Well, I hear you. Believe
you know,
me.
I mean, come on. Let's not.
One guy in 1 minute talked about his four DUIs. His wife had a DUI. His wife killed a kid in a DUI. She's in prison and found out she's now pregnant. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the most depressing. I want to jump off a building after listening to him for a minute. You know, I'm like, here's the thing that I always say to people about that too, Morris, is it's been proven it can be effective. You can do your sad talk all the time. But to me, after about 20 times of telling your sad talk, I think those are crocodile tears. I think you've lost sincerity. I can tell the same joke over and over again, and I'm just trying to get you to laugh. But if I'm trying to get you to cry and manipulate you, I mean, I know a guy, his daughter was murdered, and he's told that story now to 1,000 different audiences. You have to be a stronger person than me, Morris, to talk about the murder of your child 1,000 times. I want to talk about happy things.
Yeah.
And people often bring me in for humor. So like I was working with a financial advisor the other day. He was kind of a dry guy. He's like, how do I add humor to my talk? And I said, well, what are you selling? And he said, 401ks. And it just popped into my head. I'm like, okay, so that's it. You don't have to get people to laugh. You just got to get people to smile. So if you're speaking to people that don't really know what a 401k is, say 401k, I can't even run a 5k. And he laughed. I'm like, it doesn't have to make you laugh out loud. It just has to make you smile. This woman that deals with people with trauma, she was talking about, she's on the beach and she hears a voice and she thought it was God. And I said, okay, well, there's your part for humor is, you know, you're walking on the beach, you hear the voice, you thought it was God. And then here's this thing is then you do what I call a dramatic pause. You pause and then you say, oh, but it really was just the lifeguard. dramatic pause is one of the easiest ways to, and really the most important way to use humor in a presentation to me is make fun of yourself. I mean, life's too short. I don't like people that make fun of other people. I think that's nasty. I would much rather, you know, talk about my own faults than other people's faults. And so, again, all you're trying to do is to keep people engaged, because if you can't connect with your audience, there's no reason for them to pay attention to you. And now more than ever, people have a very short attention span. What are you doing to keep them involved in your presentation?
Involved and engaged. I think those are two critical words in whatever presentation you're doing, whether you're presenting to 100 people or 1,000 people, or whether you're presenting to your teenager. I mean, come on, parents of teenagers sell more than professional salespeople do. It's part of life. And frankly, the other way around, probably more than the parents, the kids, the teenagers are selling to us every day in every way. So it's amazing how that happens. But I think you mentioned it earlier, Danny, there's so many different places where you are involved, and each and every one of them, in all reality, in my opinion, all come back to influencing other people and selling. We're all in the business of sales. We all have to do it. And your point is so very, very true. If you're not adding value, nobody's going to want to continue to listen to you, whether you're sitting across from them at their kitchen table or whether you're speaking to them from the stage in Yankee Stadium. I don't care. You best be bringing something, brother. You best be bringing something to the plate that's going to be of some help and service.
Yeah, I really like what you just said there, Morris, because I agree. When I'm talking to high school juniors and they're asking me, what should they major in college? I say, well, I mean, I wouldn't change anything about my life. When I was an undergrad, I majored in journalism and sociology. But if I were to do it again, I would major in business and psychology, because I don't care what you do in life, you're going to use both of those. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, who's the greatest salesperson on the planet of all time? Well, it was Jesus Christ. The guy's had more albums made about him and more TV shows and movies and books, you know, best-selling books and everything. I mean, everybody's selling something. And you're all absolutely right when you say, oh, teenagers are doing it to us all the time. I love watching kids with their parents and watching. I was at the restaurant the other day and the kid next to me was just screaming and mom was doing anything the kid said. And I came very close, Morris. I'm getting older. I was about to get up and look at the mom and say, either you parent this child or I am going to parent this child.
I do that in my 30-year-olds, my kids who are in their 30s, both say, oh, dad, shut up, please, dad, go away, quit, daddy, no, dad, don't do, dad, no, I can't, yeah, right, I can't talk anymore, no, can't do that, but yeah, no, I hear you 100%, and you know, the next, I don't know, maybe it's right up there with the teenagers, but the mother of toddlers, I think also probably are some of the best salespeople in the world. The point is, words matter, language matters. And what you're doing is teaching people how to put those things together to generate influence, right? Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, this is what in my reading engagement program, I mean, I always tell people schools do an adequate job of teaching kids how to read. But the question I always ask people is, what good is it teaching a kid how to read if they never want to read? I teach kids why to read because I've never had to tell a kid, go watch TV. I've never had to tell a kid, go play a video game. And I never want to have to tell a kid, go read. I want them to choose to do it on their own. And there's some basic things that I can show parents to do with their kid. I mean, I'll give you a couple of tips. First of all, I always taught in the inner city, and a lot of my parents would say, we don't have money to have anything to read at home. I'm like, oh, you do, though. You know, President Bush Sr. over 30 years ago signed a very important law in this country that says every television set sold in the United States has to have closed captioning. So the first tip I always give parents is turn on the closed captioning on your television. And parents will say, well, wait a sec, if the show's in English and, you know, the subtitles are in English, what good does that do? I'm like, well, that's a fair point, but let me make a point. Have you ever watched a show with subtitles and not looked at the subtitles? It's very difficult to do. Your brain's actually directed towards the text. There's actually research to support this. If you look at reading scores around the world, the more kids watch TV, the lower their reading scores are in every single country on the planet, except for one. The country where kids watch the most TV also has the highest reading scores in the world. It's Finland. And people always ask me, well, how can that be, Danny? I'm like, well, because Finland makes really bad TV shows. And so what they have to do is they have to import all these old American sitcoms like The Brady Bunch and Gilligan's Island, and they translate everything into Finnish, and the kids are reading Finnish all the time. I mean, there's a quick one. You know, I'm a dad of three children, and I established the habit when the kids were little is I have a feeling television is here to stay. And unlike a lot of people, I don't believe in fearing technology. I believe in embracing technology. Let's make it part of our advantage. And so I know the kids want to watch TV. And so for me, we established the habit that the price of admission is they had to bring me something to read before they turn on the TV. So when the kids were little, they'd bring me a picture book. We'd read the picture book together. Now I have three teenagers and they'll bring me like their iPad and some silly article online and we'll read that together and then they can turn on the TV. That's an easy habit. I have different books with all my different kids and my wife. And so my oldest daughter, she's 19. She's into Game of Thrones. And so we're reading the George R. R. Martin, Wind and Fire. I can't remember the name of the book.
The Song of Wind and Fire, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah. All I know is there's a lot of language and stuff. I'm a little bit uncomfortable, but she likes it. Yeah. So my policy is whatever the kid wants to read, we can read it as long as it's not completely. Well, I mean, that's actually another thing I point out to people. I'm like, you know, the research is very clear on that. It doesn't matter what you read. What matters is how much you read. It doesn't matter if you're reading James Joyce or James and the Giant Peach. People who read more read better. I mean, you're an engineer. If I know that you're into engineering, I'll read you books about like Steve Jobs and Elon. I had just read Ashley Vance's biography on Elon Musk. And so Elon Musk is an engineer, but he did exactly what you said, Morris. He's a very good salesperson. He knows how to sell people on his ideas. And there was two things in that book about him that were fascinating to me. Well, three. First of all, he still reads at least a book a day. He was bullied as a kid, and he spent all of his time in the library. And after he read every book in the library, he went to the bookstore and started reading all those books. And he still reads at least a book a day. But there was two stories in the biography that cracked me up. One was he's at a Mexican restaurant with his biographer, and he's dating a new woman. And he looks at his biographer and he says, I'm considering allocating 8.25 hours per week to her. Is that sufficient? Well, that's spoken like an engineer. The second story, which was fascinating, was a lot of his engineers at SpaceX were starting to complain. They were annoyed because he'd be on the floor asking them questions all the time. And they're like talking to one another like, man, I already got this job. Is he trying to quiz me to see if I know what I know? And then they started comparing notes, and they're like, wait a second. He's actually listening to our answers, and the questions are becoming more sophisticated. He's learning it from us, and I think he actually understands it better than we do now. And I was like, wow, that's fascinating. It's fascinating, the mind, the way his mind. So if I had a young Morris, that's what I'd be reading to you about. Well, here's an engineer, you know, and I would be on your wife's side. I'm like, well, I'm going to make the case for why reading is important, because he wasn't able to do any of this math without understanding the words of the different problems. But I'm fascinated about those types of things. I just think this is the problem with communication right now, is everybody focuses on negative rather than focusing on the positive. And that's why I like to, if I'm reading to people, I read them uplifting stories. I was watching a horrible show on TV the other night, Morris, called The News, and it totally depressed me. I don't do that anymore. I don't watch things that are negative. My wife is annoyed that I love sports, and she's like, why are you watching this? I'm like, because at any given moment, something extraordinary can happen. It's a live sporting. I mean, that's why I love the Olympics. My wife gets annoyed because I usually root against America. And she's like, why are you rooting against America? I'm like, honey, who am I going to root for? The American with the microchip in his state-of-the-art Nike shoes, or the barefoot Sudanese refugee who just survived a civil war? And his background story is, I learned how to run when I was running away from the bullets in my village. I'm like, of course I'm rooting for that guy.
Yeah.
The most inspiring story of the world. Planted. So this is what I'm trying. I guess this is the common theme in all the different projects I'm doing, is how do we bring joy into the world? How do we communicate in a more, if people are so negative, and I'm like, folks, we can disagree with one another, but you don't have to be disagreeable to disagree with a person. You can still be respectful, you know, and we're never going to have progress when people are calling each other names. I mean, that doesn't do anything. And I like to, I joke around. I've lived too long now, Morris. I'm like, you know, I really just don't know that much. And I have a post-it on my desk, and it has a question for me. It says, what if I'm wrong? You know, everybody seems to be all right all the time. I know everything. And I'm like, you know, but what if I'm wrong? What if there's a better way to do something? I'm going to be a little bit more ears rather than talking, popping off.
You know, and that's something that we all have to learn at some point in time. I know back in the world where I was in the corporate world all the time, when you're leading a big organization, you kind of get stuck in your ways sometime. I know I did. And I got stuck in my ways, and it was really hard to listen for that new piece of whatever that was going to really come in here and help change things. And I was telling you the story of our sponsor, Allego, as we began our conversation today. And it was like a light bulb came on when Mark Magnacca came into my office. It was like, wow, we can use this. And today, he's taken what you're talking about. They've taken what you're talking about and using technology and a platform on a computer to be able to take care of that technology side of the house while still keeping it basic and simple of, you know, you want to read this, you want to watch somebody else read it or talk to you about it or tell you how to do something, that's on there. We can let you practice, which, my word, that's the only way you learn a skill. It's all there on Allego.com. So I just turned that into an advertisement, didn't I? But if
that's great. I love you. When you talked about Allego, the first thing I thought of was Allego my ego. And
I'm like, exactly.
It's getting rid of your ego. Getting rid of your ego and learning from it. So that's I love that you're showing that Allego is a positive form of technology. And that's what I tell people. I mean, humans haven't changed that much, Morris. I mean, thousands of years ago, the Greeks were like, oh, our youth are going to hell in a handbasket. They can't memorize everything. They got to write it down. These dang pencils are just this worst technology ever. I mean, it's always, oh, it's movies are going to destroy everything, or it's going to be TV or social media. Or I was just talking at a conference. We were talking about Chat GPT and artificial intelligence and how kids are going to, and I'm like, well, you can't avoid it. Kids know it's there. I mean, and if anybody that's actually used it will see that there's tons of grammatical errors, there's tons of factual errors, but it's a great starting point for brainstorming. I use it for brainstorming. I'm like, oh, this gives you great ideas. I don't fear technology. I embrace it and figure out ways to use it to my advantage.
And that just makes perfect sense, Danny. It really does. And man, I tell you what, we could continue this conversation for the next 2 hours, but I don't think anybody would keep listening to us for that long. So, you know, buddy, I tell you what, we got to do this again, because that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed talking with you and learning about what you're doing and what's going on. And you're doing so many good things to be positive and to help kids and to help us as a nation and as a world and a society and what we're living in and what we're dealing with today. So, Dr. Brissell, thank you very much for being here today on The Business of Sales.
I really appreciate you, Morris. And then just as a gift to your audience for having to put up with me for 30 minutes, I wanted to give them a couple of goodies. If you go to freegiftfromdanny.com, again, freegiftfromdanny.com, I'm going to give everybody two things. First of all, a complimentary e-copy of my book, Read, Lead, and Succeed. This is a book I wrote for a school principal who was trying to keep his faculty and staff positively engaged. So I said, okay, I'll write your book. So every week I give you a concept, an inspirational quote, an inspirational story, a book recommendation on a book you should read, but you're probably too lazy because you're an adult. So I also give you a children's picture book that demonstrates the same concept. You can read that in 5 minutes and start your meetings off with a Dr. Seuss book. And then also I'm going to give everybody access to a 5-day reading challenge I did online last summer for about 700 parents around the world, where every day for an hour, I give you all kinds of ideas on how to get your kids more excited about reading, because the more excited you are to read, the more likely you are to read, and the more you read, the better you get. You can get both of those at freegiftfromdanny.com. And this has really been a gift to me, Morris. I appreciate you having me today.
Well, thanks for being here. And thanks for the gift, man. That is outstanding. I really do appreciate that. And if somebody wants to get a hold of you, Danny, obviously, if they go to freegiftfromdanny.com, they'll find how to contact you, I trust, right?
Yeah, you can do that. Or, you know, DannyBrissell.com. My last name's really easy to remember how to spell. It's spelled like Bras Cell. No, I never took any grief over that as a child. So
I bet. Bras Cell. I bet. All right, my friend. Well, thank you very much. For everybody else out there, you guys go out and make it a great day. I'll see you again next time, next week, right here on The Business of Sales.